This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, opinion, mostly opinion, and some news. Anyway, this is the February 2023 episode of the podcast. It's a video podcast, and it goes in accordance, in line with our newsletter, which we send out every month. And this is the February 2023 newsletter edition. So we're going to be talking about what's in that newsletter and expanding maybe a little bit on the content here and there. So sit back, relax, and put your jets on, because we're about ready to take off. Here we go. So let's talk about what's in this newsletter. So it's going to be why I wrote a companion guide to the Aviation Instructor's Handbook. That's one topic. I'm going to go through the why I did that. And then after that, I'm going to tell you that we're going to be exhibiting at the FASANA, Flight School Association of North America Conference, and talk a little bit about what's there and why you might want to go, or what your takeaway is going to be, because we're going to do a podcast on that, in addition to a power hour, probably on what was covered there. And if you don't know what a power hour is, good time to tell you. So we do a weekly power hour. This week will be episode or power hour lesson 124. So we've done 124 hours of aviation content on a variety of topics. I went through them all today to categorize them. And we've done marketing 101 for flight instructors. We've done deep dives into aids on pylons. We've done how to log flight time, when you can log PAC time. We've covered FARs. We've covered how to use AC61.6165 hotel, which is for endorsing. Covered like a lot on that. We've covered how to learn to fly from the right seat. I mean, there's 124 episodes, and you can see them live for free. You can go to our website, cfibootcamp.com, and at the top you'll see a red bar. And the red bar talks about the power hour lessons, and you opt into that, then you get email reminders, so you won't forget one, or you'll make sure you get it. Because the only way else you can get the power hours is to join Bootcamp Plus at the pro level. So Bootcamp Plus has a basic and a pro level, and then a master level. So the pro level, if you're not a power hour person, you want to see all 24 power hour episodes along with our tribal knowledge videos, which we did in Jekyll Island. There's about 6 hours of that. Single subject videos, like short segments on like what the antennas on the airplane are, what they do, along with other resources that are there printed as well, material. That normally would cost $22 a month, but if you're a bootcamp, if you are a Power Hour subscriber, go to our website and do that. You get, in the outline you get after the show, which we send to everybody, you get that for $9, and you can cancel anytime you want. But there's 120 hours of content just in the Power Hours. So do that. Also, while you're there, if you want a copy of the newsletter, this newsletter, then if you go to the top, you'll find a way to opt in for the newsletter, and we'll send you that every month also. You know, whatever you want. If you want a lot, want a little, just opt into what you want, okay? So let's carry on and say what else we're going to talk about here. We're going to have a technical lesson on how the best rate of climb for an airplane is determined. And that'll be interesting, so I've done that for you. And then after that, we've got... when will the new ACSs or NPTSs come out? This is my latest intel. This is absolutely hot off the press. So as of today. And by the way, today is February the 17th, 2023, doing the newsletter. Now, usually I do it the last of the month, but I want to get ahead. I had a lot of writing to do, a lot of editing to do, and give you some updates on everything here in just a little bit. But anyway, that's what we're going to do. And then there's three pro tips we've got for you at the end of the podcast. So let's get started. So get something to drink, sit back, relax, or if you're in your car, just keep driving, but here we go. All right, let's talk about why I wrote a companion guide to the Aviation Instructor's Handbook. If you don't know, there is an Aviation Instructor's Handbook out there. It's a pretty large book. It's over 200 pages. It's 200 and some pages, like 250. It's 9 chapters, covers risk management. I'll tell you the chapters. Risk management, next chapter is human behavior, then after that is the teaching or the learning process, a lot of theory in that. And then after that is effective communication, then the teaching process. After the teaching process comes planning instructional activity, And after that comes assessment. Assessment is before planning instructional activity. It comes after the teaching process. Then planning instructional activity, and then responsibilities and professionalism for flight instructor, for instructors, instructor's responsibility and professionalism, then the techniques of flight instruction. So there's quite a bit there to cover. So the problem with all that was it's a lot to read, and it's stuff that you probably don't have any background in. So like all the aviation stuff, at least you're exposed to it by now. You know, if you're at the CFI level, there's nothing new in there. It's just, except for the endorsements. And I mean, except for that and, you know, some regulation, manipulation, that kind of thing. The actual technical subjects are familiar to you. Aerodynamics, weather, cross-country flight planning, these kinds of things are all there. So only a few other areas are there which you don't know anything about. And this is one big one. This is a giant's own area of operation. It's Area of Operation 1. In all the PTSs for flight instructor. So this is, if you wanna go get it, the big old handbook, it's FAA.H, like hotel, -8083-9B. That's the latest one. It's only a few years old. And you can get it at FAA.gov, look for training handbooks, or you can just search globally, you'll find that pretty easy. You don't need to buy a copy, you can get a PDF for free from the FAA to have a look at it. So now every single student that we come in contact with, just about everyone that does flight instructor training with us, complains about the book. All right, people don't have anything good to say about it. Unless you're in education, you might like it. But in general, if you come doing a CFI, you don't like it. After your CFI, you see some value in it. That's true. But people say it's hard to read. When they read it, it's really hard to read, and that the many details are really easy to forget. And then, of course, they ask, how is this going to be tested? And that's variable. So it's some people tested by scenario, others line by line. So I don't know who you're going to get. But we know who we use and how that gets tested. So and we teach it to you online course in that, which we have. You have to take that before you come to our seven-day class. Then we teach it in the classroom in a mind map. We have a mind map for every chapter. We go through that. Then you have worksheets and flashcards on top of that. So people get it. In fact, we've got one guy going for test right now. He's from Germany. He started, he has an EASA instructor, and he started this morning at 11, 12, 1, 2, it's 3:30, so he should be about getting to the airplane about now. It takes a long time, these orals, between 4 is the minimum that I've ever heard of, and up to 9 can take, you know, so it's a lot to do. All right, so anyway, on this book, so what I did was I said, my friend says to me once, he was doing flight instructor training at our facility. He's from Palo Alto, and he said, you know, the problem with this book is it's not operational. You can read it, but, you know, are you going to make any sense of it? Because it doesn't really tell you, except for in certain chapters, what to do. Like, how do you make this stuff operational, right? How do you use the information that's in the chapters? And so what I did was I said, that's a really clever idea for a book. And so I made a companion guide to the Aviation Instructor's Handbook that takes every single chapter and tells you what to do, how to use it, right? Making it so you can use it day to day. We actually did a power hour on it last week, I think it was, and I introduced at least one concept that I brought out for each chapter so you could kind of see what was in there. And so I think it's interesting, like for risk management, that's chapter one. My risk management section says, okay, the risk management, the theme is the same. All the chapters are way too big, super huge, right? And there's so much theory and so much, and you can only use theory so far. You know, if you have no basis in it, it's really hard to apply the theory. Like in aerodynamics, we can understand the theory because we use that a lot. So we understand that. And we also can see the value of it, right? Of knowing it. So we had the motivation for it. So anyway, for this first chapter in risk management, I said, there's too much in here. I say, we're basically telling people how to risk manage 5 different ways. So let's just use one way, right? Let's just use one way. And so I did that, and I said, we're just going to use the PAVE checklist, the pre-flight, the flight. I went through that in detail, which some of you know how to do. That's a pre-flight risk assessment. Then we're going to use ForeFlight as a weather briefing and a way of getting our NOTAMs. That'll take 10 minutes. So the whole idea is to keep this risk assessment of the flight down to about 10 minutes if it's a training flight. If it's a big flight over the ocean, well, it's going to be longer than that. Sorry. But if it's not, that's all we need. And then the next thing I said to use is use C-172 Performance. It's an app. It's free, and what it does is called, and also there's PA-28 Performance as well, and some others, but anyway, That little app will calculate your takeoff, landing distance, weight and balance, fuel burn, everything for a small cross-country trip instantly. So as soon as you put in the destination and you, where you're leaving from and the altitude you want to go to and the weight, it just does it. 5 seconds later, all the calculations are finished for the performance calculations for the airplane. So then you have got a way to do that. And you also have ForeFlight, which is calculating the flight plan. So you've got that. And then the last thing it has on the C-172 performance is there's a risk meter and a risk section. So the meter is like a little needle. It goes up from green all the way to yellow, then to red. And there are questions in there that you can tick on, like, did you sleep well? Is a stressful day at work? Is this a flight after work? Is the runway wet? And it'll move the needle, see? So between those three things, between the PAVE checklist, ForeFlight briefing, and risk assessment using the performance calculations in C-172, you can come up with a pretty fast way to do risk assessment. And then and do it every flight. And then for in-flight, we just use the 3P model. We don't really need much more than that. It's all we need. So we go through that, and that's it. And if we do that each time, then you're going to have a lot more buy-in to risk management. It's not going to be so abstract and, oh, that's in that book somewhere. That's what we don't want. So you need to make it operational. So that's the thing I wanted to say about it. Right now, the title of it, by the way, I think it's a cool title. It's The Aviation Instructor's Handbook, slant, and it's a field guide. So, I mean, that should tell you that you can use it out in the field. And now it's written and it's sitting in formatting with our formatting people right now. It's awaiting image placements and some image gathering. So I have Jonathan on that. He's done about 3 chapters with images right now. And then we give him, after the images are identified that we want, then he says where he wants them placed. And then we give it to the people in formatting. Like, for as an example, another project I'm working on, which you're kind of maybe going to like or maybe not, I'm taking the 1965 Flight Training Handbook. And it's in Times New Roman, typeset, I'm sure. And I'm rewriting it. So I'm using it as a basis for how to fly an airplane, like the new airplane flying handbook. That's only gonna contain information about piston, airplane, single engine land, airplanes. That's it, right? And it's gonna have new images in it. And I will trim up the language when it's, you know, not the right thing to say or wrong thing to say. There's some in there, but a lot of that book has a lot of the meaning, the reasons we do certain things in a particular way. And it's thin, you know, it's in order of that thick, which if you're not listening to this only, this is about not even a little more than a third of an inch, something like that. And that covers everything except for VFR stuff, right? Covers the flight side of things, doesn't cover the aeronautical side of things. That's another task, that's later. So anyway, when I got that thing and I basically took it into Word from a PDF. And when you do that, sometimes things don't work out too well. Then I also wanted to change the font from Times Roman to Arial. It's easier on the eye, easier to look at, more modern. So then I started doing that, and it starts laying in things like, instead of the line being all equal spaces between characters and between words, it starts auto-formatting that to where the line fills the spaces get big enough to fill the line, if you know what I mean, between words. So these kind of things. So for me, this is a complete waste of time to put any effort into fixing that, because by the time that I need to use that very same thing again, I need to do that again, it'll be a long time from now, and I've forgotten how to do it anyway. So this is a perfect place for me to give it to our formatting people who do that every day, right? And there's no reason. So then I can just focus on the business of authoring, which is what I do. So in this field guide, the other thing I did was I took like the most important elements, how you can use the elements within each chapter. And on top of that, I made a pop-up box. It was like a box, an inset box, right? And what it has is it has the most important things from the chapter that I thought the most important I put there. It might be 5 items or 4. And that's for quick access. So you can just, if all you did was looked at that, you'd be able to look at it and use stuff right away without even reading anything. So it covers like the using the, for the risk management side, it covered what I just said to you. That's in there, right, in the box. So that's kind of important. And then there should be about 3 to 4 images per chapter. So right now the book is 54 pages. And with those images, it should turn out to be about 10 more. So I'm estimating between 60 and 64 pages. There's about 3 images, sometimes 4 per chapter. Nothing, and I want to put the images at the end, so it's sort of like as a visual recap of what I wrote in the beginning section of it. And those images will come from the Aviation Instructor's Handbook, but they won't be the bogus ones. There's a lot of images in there that just, you know, that look like they spent a lot of time at. Okay, so there's that. And other images are quite good. I expect to release this at the Flight School Association of North America Conference, FASANA, and that will be on March the 2nd. Then it will be generally available on the website or online store, which is at cfibootcamp.com, not too long after that. That's the hope. And so I think that will that's the timing, and I'll give you some updates on that right now. So we're going to be exhibiting at the FASANA conference. This is one of the few shows that we'll actually exhibit at. So CFI Bootcamp will have a booth at the FASANA Expo, which is March the 1st through the conference, 1st through the 3rd. And we'll also be attending technical conferences. I'll be doing a speaking at a, in a panel of some kind. I don't know exactly, but it'll be a panel. The location is Orlando, Florida. I told you the dates, March 1st to the 3rd. And it's being held at the Rosin Plaza. So there's a bunch of Rosin hotels. So make sure you get the Rosin Plaza if you're going. Or better yet, go to FASANA, FASANA.com, and you get all the details and get your a PDF or whatever you want of where it's at and what it costs and all. It's a pretty pricey conference to go to. I think you can go to the exhibits for free, but the conferences, I think you have to end up paying for. So. Anyway, there's that. If you're in the area or you're going to be thinking about it or are attending, then shoot me an email at mike@cfibootcamp.com and I'll tell you the dates and times where we'll be in the booth, because it's a very strange conference in a sense that the only time the actual exhibits are going to be manned is during like breaks, coffee breaks, lunch, that kind of thing, and then in between conferences, in between topics, right? It's not the whole show, so you have to kind of get the schedule and kind of know when things are going to be to make sure someone will be there, or you may end up waiting an hour if the break just happened. So there's things like that. So anyway, the conference really focuses on the needs of flight instructors and connects vendors and sort of the supply chain with schools during that event. And so these schools are going to be very serious about flight training and not afraid of one another, which means they don't, you know, so I think Bob Rockmaker, who is the founder and currently the director of that organization, says, you know, if you're more than 50 miles away, your flight school is more than 50 miles away from another school, you're probably not competition, because people train if you're training local students. That's not true if you're training Chinese program or you're training international students. Then yes, you can have competitors, but they even come together. Like one of the guys I know pretty well is going to be Dave Morris. He was the chief pilot at Transpac, which became AeroGuard. Then he was the VP, I believe, at HAA, Hillsborough Aviation Academy, a very well put together person who's been in flight training his whole time and is really, really good at it, right? And he's one of those serious players. And he runs currently CAE in Phoenix. He's a director there, so he owns all that. He's a really good guy. So if you have a chance to meet David Morris, then do that. Okay, so then the other things that FASANA does is they do advocacy, like they represent us, flight schools in Washington, and with other, along with other Alphabet organizations. They also do accreditation of flight schools, not EDU, .edu. They do their own accreditation, which then some people are starting to recognize that, so they like that. And they also do AeroCamp, which is a sort of a fun thing for kids, right, or teenagers and people in the various age groups to have an aero camp, which is a daily thing for, I believe it's a week, and it's a profit motive sort of generating thing. And you know, they've got a thing which says, you know, if you don't make, you know, if you don't at least break even, you know, we'll refund all your stuff for aero camp. So that's pretty good. And they do a really good job with things like that. FASANA.com, FASANA.com. And then I put down the reasons why we're going to go. So the reasons we're going to go is I'm going to speak about flight instructor training in various panels. That's what I intend to do, right? That's what I know. Then I'm going to gain information about Part 141 certification with the FAA personnel that is there. They do have an industry update from FAA that will be there. And there's one thing I'm waiting for, like holding my breath for, if there's such a thing, right? Putting up a glass of champagne. Cheers when this happens. Ding, ding, ding. I'll hit it. Ding, 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 1,000 times, right? I want the FAA to do what they said they were going to do, which is bring all the 141 certification and all of the 141 stuff in back to Oklahoma City, not have it to the FISDOs. And then they can decide how they're going to observe it. But the FISDO had nothing to do with it except for enforcement showing inspections and maybe some evaluation or proficiency tests for the chief, assistant chiefs, that kind of thing. But not the day-to-day or certification at all. I think that's a specialty area. And I think the FISDO doesn't do sometimes enough of those to where only occasionally, and so I think they just get bogged down. But if you take If you take one organization within FAA and that's all they do is 141, 142 kind of schools, or maybe something else, well, now you'll get your stuff done a lot more quickly. And a lot of things will be easily recognized to them if they see the same thing over and over again. And they'll be doing like many of these per week or per year or per month or whatever that is. So they'll have frequency, which means it won't take as long. So that's what I'm advocating for, just so you know. So I want to talk to them about that. We're also looking for flight schools to partner with us to be able to teach or use CFI Bootcamp's proven system to create CFIs in locations across the country. That's our growth model. Is we want to, now we don't want to put up our own brick and mortar, we want to use yours. So, and we want a revenue share with that. That's fine to do that. And that will allow a school that currently either doesn't do a very good job of CFI training because they don't have the right materials or the program, they don't have this or that, and need some support, or don't have one at all. And then the other thing we're pushing for, which will be sometime, is we're trying to get our CFI online and our CFI in-person class 141 approved. And when that happens, then these larger flight schools can use our online course in lieu of their own and give half credit. Then they can do the other half of the training, which really is about all it takes, and standardize their SOP and do things like that. That makes sense. This is how we do it here. You know, it's not invented here syndrome, that we do it this way here, is how we do it, unusual attitude, whatever they want to do, right? But that will sort of do all the heavy lifting for them. So that's the goal, now that you know what we're doing. The other thing we're doing is releasing Pathways, which I think I've told you about. But basically, it's a smart syllabus that you can teach directly from. It has all the content is embedded in it. So we wrote all new content for it. So you can do any flight or ground lesson. You pick the stage one. It's like a 141 syllabus, except for it's flexible. You don't have to grade anything out. You don't have to include flight times. You don't have to put the student name there if you don't want to. You can just teach the lesson. So you can pick and choose what you want. Just use it or not, the grading side of it and the flight tracking part of it. So anyway, and then from there, you just launch the lesson you want, and all of a sudden there comes the syllabus, which you're supposed to do that an hour or 2 hours or whatever it's gonna be, and all the content. Then you click on that and the content comes. And it's not a lot, so it's images, a lot of images, and then some one-liners, like to give you a nudge to say this is what you need to teach. And if you need more than that, then use our Teach Pre-Fly or lesson plans. If you're teaching a flight, it'll give you the pre-flight briefing to give, and also any whiteboard drawings you're gonna do, or what activities that the student needs to do or you need to do before the lesson's complete. And there are stage exams. There's three stage exams in there, the one, two, and there's three stages, one and two, and then three is in the course. So that was showing that, and that thing is incredible. I mean, it's a lot of work. We put a lot of time into it. It's for private currently. It'll be instrument, commercial, and multi, soon enough, I mean, within this year. So that's what we're doing on that. We'll be releasing that version, showing that version, at least at the show. So that's, I'll be showing that a lot. And then we're also releasing the Aviation Instructor's Handbook Field Guide, which I just told you about. And we also have something else for you CFIs in training. We have a CFI PTS Laser Focus Study Guide. And what I did was I took all technical subject areas from the PTS, and I put some crib notes around what you might want to know from that. And then also what resources, the chapter, page number, the FAR, the whatever, where that stuff's located, NAIC. So that way when you go do a study session and you want to study this particular thing, you have everything you need there. You just got to get the handbooks or get the thing. You don't have to go searching, do I have everything? Is there an AC that addresses that? Where does it say that? You know, all that stuff's there. So that makes the studying a lot more efficient and a lot quicker. So there's that. So that's things we're doing there. So if you're in town attending a conference, please stop by and say hello. Last thing we need to cover is how the best rate of climb for an airplane is determined. It's not that hard. The other one's going to be harder next month. So the best rate of climb speed, or VY, is a speed that if used can cause the airplane to climb in the shortest amount of time. So it's time-based, right? It's rate-based. So it can be used to get to an altitude. It can be used to get to an altitude. That's wrong. The video, I have to change the newsletter. But it can use to an altitude in the shortest amount of time. And it doesn't matter whether there's a headwind or tailwind, you will get to the altitude in the same amount of time. Your distance across the ground will change, which will change the angle of climb. But your time to get to the altitude won't, because it's only a function of excess power that causes you to climb at the best rate. So now we'll talk about that. So I guess I need to make sure I change the newsletter before it goes out. So that's okay. So its cousin is the best angle of climb, which is V sub X, VX. And that will get you the speed that will cause the airplane to climb the highest in a given distance. Now that is a function of excess thrust. And so that does change with a headwind or tailwind, the angle will. So if you imagine, say you're taking off from an airport and your speed is 60, that's your best rate of climb. I don't know what it is, something like that. And you don't have any wind and you're climbing at 1,000 feet a minute, then 1 mile you'll be 1,000 feet, right? But if you got a tailwind, you're still, the engine motor is only producing so much power out, right? You're still gonna climb at 1,000 feet per minute, right? But if you got a 60 knot tailwind, now at that same place, 1 mile down the road, you know, you're now only gonna be at 500 feet. So the angle is gonna be a lot shallower. And if headwind, the other way around. So the angle changes, but the rate does not. So then we have to talk about, where does this come from? So once you wanna climb, which in a powered airplane, what you need to do is change the flight path, right? So you've got to change the flight path to a climb, a sustainable climb. And then once you get there, if you have no motor, you're not going to be able to stay there, right? Unless you have thermals or you have something that's causing you to get that extra lift like that. But for us, the only way we're going to be able to stay there is by adding power, because we're going to have this lift. So if you think about it, you got, if I show you my hand, right? When you're in straight level flight, you got lift. This is the wing. You got lift that opposes weight or gravity down here, right? But when I climb, it gets tilted backwards. Weight still acts downward, but lift go like that, right? What's the total result of the lift? And that's parallel, perpendicular to the flight path, which is that way. So there's a part of that that's keeping you up, but there's also a part that's pulling you back. And the same with the weight. Here's the weight, and here's the lift, and this is the lift that opposes weight, which is a component of weight that's pulling you back. So you have to overcome those two things. The only way you're going to do it is with power. So then, fine, you say, okay, well, that's all right. So then what we have to overcome then, for those of you who remember the basic aerodynamics, is the faster you go, the more power you need. And why? Because you need to overcome drag, right? If you were in space and there was no atmosphere, then as soon as you got a particular speed, you could pretty much maintain it indefinitely. There's no drag, right? Not entirely true, but that's pretty much the case, right? But here, because we have an atmosphere and particles all over the place, you got to move all those particles out of the way in order to occupy the space that you want to be in, and that takes energy, right? And so that's why that the faster you go, the more particles get bombarded onto the airframe, and the more power you have to use to overcome that, and there'll be a point where you can't go any faster, right? And on the other side of the equation, when you start getting slow, if you want to maintain level flight, you have to tilt the nose of the airplane up, right? Because you got to generate lift by angle of attack. And so what that does, what does it do? So it directs lift backwards, right? So it does like this way, like your hand out the window. Your hand don't go straight up, right? On the car, it goes up and back. It's that backward part that's causing, you need to overcome along with the wingtip vortices, right? So you've got that at slow speed, because at a fast speed, you don't generate lift by angle of attack. You have very little angle of attack, so that lift is more vertical. But when you climb or you are in that situation, low angle attack, you have induced drag. And so it's kind of weird, but then you need power there too to overcome that. So you need power to go fast, you need power to go slow, right? That's the main takeaway. And as we go forward with this conversation, we're almost to the end of the punchline. So if you think about as fast as you can go, when you're there, or slow as you can go, you're using all the available power that you have to maintain level flight at that speed. There's no reserve power. So therefore, you cannot climb, right? So in the areas in between, where there's a difference between what you need to stay afloat, what you need to stay at the altitude, the speed, and you're only at 2,100 RPM and you got 27 available, you've got excess power. And so you climb on excess power, right? And so the place where you have the biggest distance between the power you need and the power you have available is the best rate of climb. And it's in our newsletter. Maybe I'll show it to you. There's an image here. It comes from the 1965 manual. And so maybe I can kind of show it to you here, if I can hopefully do that. Here it is. And maybe you can see it. I hope so. Like that. And you can see at that point, it says at the bottom, it says airspeed, which results in the maximum rate of climb. That's where the altitude is, the power is highest for any given airspeed, the power out of the engine. So as you change speeds, you'd have drag to deal with. And at that point, right there, you have the biggest separation between the power that you need and the power that's required. And then next week, we're going to talk about the best angle of climb and how it's not that, okay? So, and anyway, if you get the newsletter, which I believe there's a link in the podcast to it, I hope so, then you'll see that diagram. But if you want to know where it's at, in case you want to find it, I guess that'd be nice. It's in the 1965 Flight Training Handbook by FAA. You could probably find a PDF copy online. That's what I used. So it's a good little book, as I've been touting it here. Okay, so so the next last item I want to really cover is, when will the new ACS be coming out? And this is my latest intel, just so you know. It's my absolute latest intel on it. So as many of you know, the FAA published the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, NPRM, and it was to add the last of the ACSs and PTSs and make them part of an FAR, right? It's the idea of it is to attach it as a reference to, that's a required reference to that FAR. That's what they're doing. And so that's already been done now. I mean, in terms of it's out there. And they extended the public comment period from January the 11th to February the 11th, which is now passed. So there's no way to comment on it anymore. So the FAA is now going to take those comments and determine if the rule needs to be modified or whatever, right? That's what they're going to do. And it will, may take a short amount of time, might take a long amount of time. After determination of any changes are made, then the FAA can release the ACS, or the, there's PTSs in there too. They didn't bother with the instrument flight instructor one, and the recreational pilot one is still as is. And so typically they're published, you know, by to FAA.gov when they're done, and they have an effective date on the ACSs or PTSs saying, here they are, and this is the date they're going to become law, and the time you got to use them. And that's usually around 30 days to give people enough time, right, to either change training and, or testing changes, right? So that's what it is. So that means, you know, if I think about estimating the time looking forward, the earliest I expect to see this is in about 2 months. That'd be as quick as I think they could do it. With that, it would include the 30-day window for them to give you. Could be 2 months. However, I'm speaking to someone who's kind of in the know. Can't say the name, you know, because the person's not authorized to speak about that. But anyway, they said they believe it's about a year away. So I don't know if that helps you. I mean, you know, for sure it's coming. I think we're pretty much going to say that it's coming, right? But not for a little bit, whatever a little bit means. And I do also have one thing to say. Historically, they release ACSs and PTSs in June, so you know, right? So if I'm betting, I'll say June or a year from now. That's my two bets. Okay, here we go. Three pro tips. We're going to do three pro tips for you, like we do every week or every month. Sorry. The first is going to be chair fly the memory items on the emergency checklist. So if you don't know what chair flying is, you sit in the chair and you pretend that you're doing something. You know where things are located, or if you have a mock-up of the cockpit, that even better. And better yet, if you can gain access to an airplane that's like the airplane you're going to fly, that's even better. And practice inside the airplane. So memory items should be practiced frequently. Use the airline route here. You know, so it's like every 6 months they have to do proficiency checks in the sim, right? And pass that. Do training, pass it, CBT training. So, you know, do the same thing. So every 6 months, be sure, or more frequent, that you're practicing all the memory items by chair flying and the emergencies, right? That's what you really want to do. So do that. Number two tip of the day is, here are some ground speeds to know for quick mental calculations. So, you know, some quick mental math can pay off when you're trying to estimate something, right? So put these into memory. So this is for 172. It's near enough for the other airplanes, the training airplanes you might fly. 74, 90, and 120. Those are knots. So 74 is like the best rate of climb in a Cessna 172 November model. 90, like a maneuvering training speed. And 120, about as fast as you want to go in a descent. So 74 knots per hour is about 1.2 miles per minute. So if you want to know like how far you should start to descend or something of that nature, you'll be able to do it with this. 90 knots is 1.5 miles per minute, and 120 knots is 2 miles a minute. So for example, if you were 120 knots and you were, let's say you were 10,000 feet, you got to go down to 5,000 feet, that's 5,000 feet to lose. And if you're descending 500 feet a minute, it's going to take you 10 minutes to get down there, right? So 500 feet per minute, and then 5,000 feet, 10 minutes. And then you could say, well, what distance should I start letting down to get to the airport? Well, if you're doing 120, that's 2 miles a minute. So 10 minutes, you get 20 miles. And at 90 knots, it's 15 miles. And at 74 knots, if you're climbing, it'd be 1.2. So that's kind of quick mental math for that. You can go over that, listen to it again, maybe make more sense. Or if you already know what I'm talking about, then great. And the last thing we need to consider is, in the pro tip, is trimming. So trim when the airspeed's constant, if you're able to, if it's not too much force to hold off. It reduces the time and frequency of trimming if you do this. Anytime the airplane changes speed, it will require a trim change, every single time. While it's okay to trim while the speed is changing, the final trimming won't be done until the speed is stable. You'll still be doing more trimming until the speed stops changing. So trimming too frequently robs you of time. I've seen it over and over again. When someone comes out of private pilot, they go to instrument rating and they trim the airplane too much, then they can't seem to, it's too hard, like to adjust the radio, do this, then the airplane does this. Oh, should I gotta go back to trim again, right? Because they're trimming too frequently, right? They're not waiting for the moment when the speed is stable to do it. Also, trimming when the speed is stable will result in fewer trim changes. So if you waited all the way until the speed was stable, if you held off the force, maybe it's not a lot, maybe it's a lot, then it'd be difficult. But if you could hold it off and you made trim change when the speed was stable, you probably make the first trim change and maybe a second one, maybe. Maybe not. But if you're trimming, like constantly chasing the trim wheel with this airplane, you're doing it wrong. So you need to be able to feel the aerodynamic force and get rid of it. That's what it's for, right? The trim is for. So that's what I have to say this week. We did about the 36-minute show. Woo, there you go. So if you don't belong to CFI Bootcamp Plus, try to join you. Basic membership is free, and there's about 10 or 12 power hour lessons in there. If you're not a Power Hour subscriber and you want to see those Saturday shows for free, which is, by the way, tomorrow for me, we're doing short field landing tips. And we're contrasting the 1965 handbook with today and see what's different. That's going to be fun. Right, we're doing that. And there's other things in there. Tribal video, many, many, many things in the pro version. But in the free version, there's still quite a lot of stuff in there. So I would do that. That also lets you get to know us, so you know that we're constantly providing some kind of good content to you. It's never... we never provide any content that I feel that wouldn't be useful to you. So I'm not going to send you just an ad unless it's a one-time sale that we do here or there or something. That you might get one of those. But in general, you're not going to get a lot of that. You'll get stuff maybe as part of good stuff we send you, like we send you the outline for the power hours after every one, along with the chat log. So people put in things that they thought were interesting or we think is interesting, then we can just pass along to you with that chat log. So that's all very useful. So that's at our CFI Bootcamp website. It's a red bar at the top. And then there's all different offers throughout if you're a Power Hour is probably one of the best places if you're interested in our stuff to join, because we release everything to the Power Hour people first and set newsletter people pretty close. But some things the Power Hour people get just because they're a live audience, right? Sometimes we'll just give something away. Sometimes we'll have someone else give something away. We had a guy give a full-on scholarship on a Power Hour. It's not to one of the people who was online. So you never know what will happen. And that's a really, really good place to be. So that's what I have to say about this week. Next month, the article, one of the articles is going to be how to VX is determined. And I'll have a better way to, I think Nick might be able to even do that in the video editing next time, just show that image or show a series of images that might be helpful. That's all I got for you. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. And that's it for another episode of Flight Training the Way I See It. See you next time. This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinions.